From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And you know, some guys have all the luck, right? We've all heard that saying before. Some guys have all the luck, and other people put themselves in a position to win. Maybe we aren't lucky. Maybe it is that we have put ourselves in a position to win. And so today, my friends, I have put all of us in a position to win. We are going to be joined by Catherine Bateman. She is a marketing expert extraordinaire, and she's going to be sharing tips about marketing, but also tips about growing a business. You know, there's in the startup world, we don't have the luxury of some of these larger brands where we can throw money at the problem. We have to be very cost conscious. What we do needs to work, or we need to test out of it in a very affordable way. And Catherine will share her real world advice, right? Real world expertise in helping you to contemplate how you might grow your company. So stick around. Hear a little bit from Catherine Bateman.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
And now it is my pleasure to bring on Catherine Bateman. She is a fractional CMO, and we're going to discover what that means here in a minute, but she is somebody who is helping me. She is helping our team with the Growth Factory. And I heard her speak the other day about branding and building the right marketing for your business. And she was talking to startups at the time, but she does much, much more than that. So welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If you don't mind, maybe give me a little bit of your background and your journey to becoming this marketing guru.
Well, hopefully there are college-age students listening to this, because I didn't come into it thinking that I was going to be a marketer. When I was in high school, I thought I was going to be an architect. Hmm. I went to UCLA, which makes no sense because they don't have an undergrad architecture program. But, you know, you're 18. Out of UCLA, had decided that I think urban planning and that type of, you know, event, I was... Oh, this is hard. This is my first podcast. So,
well, yeah. Okay. So you're coming out of college.
So I was a little, and this is a bad term to use. My daughter says it, but I won't say schizophrenic, but I had left brain, right brain going on battles. So I was a design major as well as a geography, and geography meaning like why a person travels 5 minutes for a bar of soap, but an hour for a car. So central place theory, central business district, like why they grow the way they do. Mm-hmm. So a lot of like, in a way, social geography. It was social geography, but more almost like marketing. So mm-hmm. why things grow the way they do and expand and whatnot. So out of undergrad, you know, looked at thousands of jobs and landed at BBDO advertising, which, you know, as fate would have it, was like the perfect blend of the business side with creative. I worked on the Pepsi account. So for two and a half years, I was on the agency side and was going back to business school. My client was writing me a letter of recommendation, and she said, you know, I'm not going to do this. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Why are you not going to do this? She's like, because I want you to come work for us. And I was like, you guys don't hire, Pepsi doesn't hire non-NBAs. Like, that's just not a thing for, you know, a corporate job. Mm-hmm. And she said, but I've got it cleared. You know, Roger Enrico at the time was like, you know, Yum, what spun off as Yum, he was the CEO. And she said, he's even blessed it. It's fine. So I go to work for Pepsi for a couple of years, which was amazing. Went back to business school. Out of business school, did CPG, you know, with Clorox. Paid my dues there, which is invaluable as a marketer. Then went to Intel. From Intel, went to Macy's.com when they were bringing the brand. So I have had gigantic brands and the most bureaucratic and, you know, kind of lack of being able to move fast. And then I've also now done 20 years, I guess, of startups.
Right.
And within that, kind of like Memorial Sloan Kettering and some bigger brands like Two Men in a Truck. So different, like when brands need a repositioning or something like that, bigger brands. But I love getting involved with startups. And that's where I think it came to be this fractional CMO kind of position, because so many startups, you'd never think about a startup. And sorry if I'm talking too long.
No, you're doing great.
A startup would never think about, and a VC would never think about giving money to an entrepreneur that didn't have a CFO or like a fractional CFO or right. any kind of governance is there. They would never, if you didn't have your tech, you know, like if you're building a product, right? Your tech team would come first, or your team that's building the product. But the marketing piece, they always thought of as an afterthought, right? It's always like, well, that's just the advertising. Well, that's 1P, right? Marketing, like a marketing major is a BS. It's a bachelor's of science for a reason, because it's 4Ps. It's pricing, it's product. So it means, oh, tech. If it's, you know, if it's being built out of technology, then it's still product. So you should still have a marketer involved with that discussion from the get-go. And so, you know, essentially they would think about it as an afterthought. Well, now as a vendor of choice, like I think even the bigger hefty funds, like the big mega funds, the Graycrofts in New York, the Bloomberg Betas, they're starting to say, you know what, here are some vendors of choice who do fractional CMO.
Right.
Because, you know, when you're doing things like looking at your roadmap and roadmap prioritization, that takes someone thinking about, well, who's your end user? And who have you said are you defining this product for? And what market niche is out there? So
in terms of fractional chief marketing officers, you think about how that works. How much time ends up going into that commitment? Is it half time? Is it 25% of the time? What do I get when I do a fractional CMO type of contract? What can I expect?
Do you want my answer or the answer that if I had a CFO, they would want me to give? Because I tend
give
to
me
give
the,
more.
Yeah, give me, oh, okay, yeah, yeah. So maybe from a, just an industry perspective, what might they expect if it wasn't you? Yeah.
I mean, I think there's varying degrees of how I approach it. I think other people approach it also a little differently. Like I have a tendency to get in and definitely get dirty in terms of if I'm engaged with an entrepreneur, then I am kind of all in, and mm-hmm. it's rolling up your sleeves. It's like I've you know, packaged up swag for investors. I've, right. you know what I mean? So it's a little bit of kind of everything, but I think from a very 20,000 foot level, there's advisory where it's, you know, hey, we're having C-level conversations. We need you there. And you're helping guide a team. Or there's actually like, I am building out the team, hiring people, deciding, are we buying, are we borrowing? You know what I mean? Are we outsourcing some of these things until we scale to a certain point? So it really depends on where they are in the life cycle. Early on for like product fit and, you know, product definition and everything else, it's more of like sort of a limited, you know, engagement, just because you're looking at just what they're already coming up with and validating it. But as they go to market, then obviously it's a little deeper.
One of the things I see with many creative type CEOs, and they're thinking about marketing, they try to do some of the branding and marketing stuff themselves. And yeah, then they go get funded. And now people are expecting things to pop right now. And, you know, when to hire an agency, when to hire a fractional CMO, or when to go start building out the team yourself with a, you know, taking a risk and just paying, you know, somebody a couple $100,000 a year to be your chief marketing officer.
Yeah.
It's like, which direction do you begin with? I mean, it's an interesting question. How do you, if you were just advising somebody on that kind of thing, it's like, when is it time to go fractional? When is it time to go, no, get yourself a full-time person in the business?
Yeah.
And when is it time to maybe just use a marketing agency?
Now you'll get me into my pet peeve very quickly. I have a tendency to feel like marketing agencies, like a lot of times the CEOs might hire an agency that say they are the story agency, or they'll be a brand identity agency. And, you know, there's so many bad ones out there that haven't come up through the ranks of either an advertising, like classical background, where you truly understand how to build, you know, a creative brief and what that means, like how you write creative for the end user, mm-hmm. versus so many technologists and so many founders talk features and they don't talk benefits. And a true classically trained marketer will talk only in benefits and only to a specific target. And so many of these story builders and these identity people, you know, like when you go to get a logo, they'll give you three logos. And you're like, what the hell? That you can't even decide what you like or don't like in a, so I have, you know, designers that I work with that I've worked with for 20 years that I've never had a client unhappy with the end result. I've never had a client in 6 months or 2 years later when they've gotten their Series A or, you know, they've gotten more funding, change their brand, mm-hmm. because we did it right in the beginning. And that is a process, right? It's not just a, oh, this looks pretty, you know, like, oh, let's go copy somebody else's logo. Like there are finite reasons why an A looks the way it does in your logo, or there should be, right? Mm-hmm. Like there should be a strategic reason why people do things. And so the question is, when you bring in a CMO or someone like me, is early on 10% of the time, right? Give them equity if you need to. Like don't, if it's a cash flow problem, you know, figure out that. But if you have them in earlier, then even the ground up logo, colors, the look and feel, like what you're doing even on your initial website will be better, you know, equipped to like have right. legs to stand on later on.
And when you're raising money too, I mean, your pitch deck and your, you know, your early customers, they want to, we want to see a level of professionalism that doesn't necessarily happen if you just go hire somebody to build you a website or right. You build the pitch deck yourself out of, you know, on PowerPoint. It needs to have something.
And again, I'll get into my pet peeves because I've found so many wolves in sheep's clothing or whatever that clients will come to me and say, well, I paid $70,000 for this. And I'm like, I don't know who you paid $70,000 for, but look at all these gaps that are in from your messaging to what your logo looks like. They're like you found that. Like I couldn't figure out what was wrong with it, but you nailed it in 10 minutes. Well, it's because I'm thinking about it in a different way. I'm not thinking about it only from like the visual piece, because things can look amazing and look professional, but still not really communicate what you wanted your brand to communicate. That's the disconnect. So to me, there's a lot in the way that CPG and like sort of classically like big agencies, like big advertising agencies.
CPG is consumer packaging.
Yes. Yeah. And they're, you know, they're slow as like everything. And, you know, they don't make changes very quickly, but ever. But at the same time, they teach you how to maintain your business unit, right? Like, because you're in charge of everything from packaging to, you know, finance and everything else. And so that part of it, I think, teaches you how to look like at a business, not just from the advertising or promotional standpoint.
You know, it's an interesting question. When your brand doesn't have the basics built around the right logo, the right messaging, maybe the way your story is conveyed on your website, that's sort of shaky, but yet you need to grow revenue. So you're running marketing campaigns to try to generate activity and user growth and so on. So you're kind of getting the cart before the horse if your brand isn't built yet. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Spend your resources on getting the brand right before you start spending a lot of money on advertising.
Well, and that's, I mean, obviously that's the rub, right? If there is a need to get to market fast, then you can't go to some of these big agencies that are gonna be like, okay, you're gonna onboard for 3 months, and then we're gonna go do our, you know, like research for 2 months, and then in 6 months we're gonna give you a plan. It's like, no, I have 6 weeks. Right. Yeah. Like, so there are certain things that gut and, you know, the CEO is going to drive some of it. And then you have to like fit it into the plan. And my biggest thing, like when we started Buddy Media, which is the company that sold to Salesforce for $750 million. We always had the adage that, you know, you ship imperfection and you perfect on the fly. So you know it's not going to be right. You can't perseverate on like what is perfect. You've got to ship it imperfect, and you're building the plane as you're flying it. So those things have to be true, right? You can't have, I've worked with a lot of people who I value their opinion from a strategic marketing standpoint, and I think they're brilliant minds, but they cannot step into a startup. They cannot step into that role of, I don't have 6 months to do a location scout for this spot, this commercial. I have 6 weeks to get it on air. So therefore, we have a week to do a location, and we're going to just, you know, make it work as best we can. And oh, by the way, it's going to look amazing because we still have these world-class people who are working on it. So it's that shifting of how do you compress the timeline, the budget, all of that to make it work in a startup.
So it's kind of like thinking entrepreneurially as an outsourced partner.
100%.
That's interesting. So let's talk about the building a great brand. These iconic brands like Pepsi, you mentioned, Macy's, like they didn't become that overnight. So if you are a early stage company and a startup, you still want to build something that is lasting. Give me your thoughts on how do you do that? I mean,
I have many, many examples of how not to do it.
Okay. Let's talk about how that's good because, I mean, I don't know what.
So again, I'll go back to Buddy Media. Buddy Media, we assumed the name. It wasn't a name that we bought a company that was, you know, one guy in his bedroom, you know, whatever. We kept the name. Buddy, everybody who got hired wanted to just call it Buddy. It's like, no, you cannot call Buddy because if you Google Buddy, you know what you're going to find? Nothing, right? We're going to be on page 17 of that search. That we're never going to be able to own it. It is Buddy Media. And literally, we would have a swear jar that was, if you said Buddy, you'd be like, and there'd be a money jar because it couldn't be. So that was just like step one of the brand.
Did people want it Buddy because it's shorter and names like Apple?
It was fun. It was
like
Buddy.
Pepsi,
you know,
yeah.
Like, oh, every brand
needs a
Buddy. It always
feels fun to shorten things up. But yeah, it's obviously it's not searchable if buddymedia.com is your domain.
Yeah. Well, and also it didn't really say what we, you know what I mean? So there was just a lot of reasons.
True.
And so, you know, that's first and foremost, like from the ground up being consistent with your brand, even if you have 10 people in your company, because those are 10 impressions. Every time someone speaks that brand, that's an impression that you didn't pay for. And you better well have all of those be saying the same thing at the same time or else your megaphone is saying nothing, right? So, or if you're only spending $5,000 a month instead of the $500,000 a month that other big brands are spending, then it means every message has to say the same thing. You know what I mean? You can't be testing and being like, oh, it's okay because I'm just saying it to this audience. It's like, no, you have to make it be, you know, like you have to thread every needle so perfectly
on
the same
for
message.
Your name. Okay, so for the name of your company, like our company's Growth Factory, and I think it's resonating at some level. It's simple. It's two words and people are repeating it. But then we have mantras and, you know, our messaging. How granular does that, how important is the repeatability, the consecutive repeatability portion of a mantra potentially?
It's obviously it's super important. Like you have, so for instance, just do it.
Yeah.
Never would they have ever allowed just doing it, right? Like those are things that, again, from a small startup, you have to set things up in a way that is, we're never going to say just doing it, right? Like if you have a mantra that is, I don't know, I can't think of one that.
One that we say a lot, it's not, I don't know that it's resonated as our only mantra. Nobody builds a truly great company alone. That's something I say a lot. A little long, but it's a quote that our team is using repeatedly.
So you'd want, because you're not spending $30,000 on getting that everywhere, you're not building outdoor boards in Times Square and you're not doing all that stuff, then you want to make sure everybody says it the same way.
Okay.
So that's the thing. It's like,
but it's not that good. So shorten it up, Haney.
Well, I mean, you know, I think you could get it to like something else. Like if you had a copywriter look at that, they'd probably come up with that same sentiment, but it would be something that would be more ownable and shorter.
Yes.
Right. And that's that, like, okay, so how much do we want to invest in that? Like, are you a consumer brand? Are you like, what's the importance of having that? It probably is important.
Well, okay. So I'm going to dive into this a little bit. Okay. So in terms of that, short and sweet is better than long because it's going to be like, just do it, three words. Does it get better than that? Or is that something we should try to almost emulate?
I mean, no, it probably doesn't get better than that because it wasn't about the product. It was about the emotion.
And so apples think different. Okay.
It's not grammatically correct. It's not, you know what I mean? So yeah, that's amazing, right? And again, it wasn't about the product. It wasn't like compute better, right? It wasn't some technology going, I want it to be like about the tech. No, it's not about the feature. It was about the emotional connection. If you can get a brand to tie you to an emotion and get you invested in that brand because of the emotion that it's evoking, that's pay dirt. Like that is your, and I don't care if it's Salesforce, right? Like if you can say to a CEO that if you hire Salesforce or you use Salesforce, you're going to know everything, you know, and it's going to give you peace of mind. And it's going to let you sleep. That's better than saying, here are all the features, right? You can do, you know, pipeline analysis or, you know, that's more important because then you're tying something intrinsically to them that they're going to relate to on another plane, which is more important. Right. Okay. So the just do it, the think different, those are amazing. What's Coke's? Coke is best thing in life or no, what?
Gosh, I can't think of it. I'm trying to think of the different Coke and a smile. I remember when I was a kid, they said that.
Yeah, have a Coke and a smile. Yeah. But anyway, those kinds of things, obviously, we're talking about the Chiat days, like the amazing creative minds of the world, right? So a startup might not have that, but they can still employ the same type of, you know, like come up with your brand book, make sure people are using it. I have an ongoing kind of battle right now with a CEO, not a battle, but a definite, like, she's like, but the salespeople just want to say it this way. And I was like, but the salespeople don't get to say it this way because that's not what your brand does, right? Like it's, this is XYZ. This is the way they need to say it. And she's like, well, we want to make it their own. I'm like, well, you're 14 people. Yeah. So you're going to have 14 different brands out there in the marketplace because 14 different people are talking about it in different ways.
So so you spend some time on the front side. It's you, potentially the CEO or the CEO, you, maybe a small management team. And you come up with all this creative stuff, right? There's this, and that's a process. And it's like, you're taking me away from running my business for this, for these meetings and, you know, I can picture post-it notes and things like that happening. Yep. And then you come back and give them some stuff and it's back and forth and you finally come up with, you called it a book?
Either, you know, people call it a brand book, people call it, like, it's really truly your communications platform.
Okay.
So it's everything from your personality of your brand, you know, your colors, your messaging, like your key messages. So not all of them, right? Like, obviously you're going to come up with your unique selling proposition, your USP. That is key, right? That is the thing that you do well and your consumers want.
Give me an example of that. So unique selling proposition.
I wish I had my deck. So I'm trying to think of one that is like on the top of my head. That is the thing that is defendable about what you do versus what your competition does. Okay. But more importantly, if you do it better than your competition, but your consumer doesn't want it, then it's not a USP, right? Like, so it's got to be something that is defendable. Like, for instance, a brand that I'm working with is the tech isn't that different than 20 competitors that are out there. Her unique selling proposition is, in fact, that she's an instructor and she built the platform. She's a fitness instructor. And she built the platform with her lens. So that is a very different way than the rest of the platforms that are out there that were all built by technologists who were just like, I see a space, you know, I see an application for something I've already built and putting it in the fitness world for studios and whatnot. So her thing is the unique selling proposition is her customer service, which is like white glove, and that it was built, it's for instructors by instructors. So all of their salespeople are all instructors. So it might not be something tangible, right, that is patent worthy or anything like that, but it is something that is important to the consumer and that is defendable, right, that they can stand on. So
like for us, we're the Growth Factory Startup Accelerator with accompanying venture fund and a backyard advantage. And that backyard advantage really is the difference. We've rallied the leaders of Sacramento around the most promising startups.
Exactly.
And that we feel like, I didn't know the term for it, but that's kind of our differentiation.
USP.
Because it's like there's accelerators, there's funds, but there aren't those two combined with the leaders of Sacramento behind you.
Exactly. Okay. Well, and that's something that if you've already locked them up, then it's defendable.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're invested in you. You're in, you know, like your.
Well, that's an interesting question. So, you know, when you're in the process of locking them up, it is the goal to lock them up. And we are making great traction. As you know, we're doing well. But there was a time when it was the beginning, right? And we were still using it. It was more conceptual.
Right.
So that's an interesting, it was more aspirational and conceptual. You still need to use it, right?
I say that there's a thing called a red line, right? So it's part of what this brand foundation does is provide you with what's that path from where you are today to where you want to be. You're aspirational. And so sometimes some of that USP might be a little bit of vapor, particularly with like a technology, like a software or something like that, because some of what you're building is still not being built. Like, it's
we
on
bring
the
good things to life. I'm GE, but look, I have a beta, or, you know, I have a minimum viable product. We don't have users yet.
Exactly.
Or, you know, got my mom using it. That's it.
Exactly. So it's still building that foundation on that thing that then you can guide back to. So for instance, with Buddy Media, we said where every big brand needs their Sherpa, their person who's going to help them guide, navigate social media. Because 2008, we knew it was going to be big, but they couldn't figure out how to do anything within Facebook and MySpace and everything else to actually engage their consumers where their consumers were with their brands. So that became sort of the unique selling proposition, is that we were the ones who were going to guide them, right? Because we knew all.
Okay, Buddy Media, that's what you guys did.
That's what we did. And for the first 3 years, honestly, we were a consultancy. We were a marketing consultancy. We were a technology company, but for all intent and purpose. But the way we positioned everything became proprietary and looked like it was an automation. And then we built the SaaS that was the platform that then, you know, was around. And
Startup, you got to pay the bills doing consultancy type work, and then you build something that makes it worth $700.
Right. Yeah. But they were in appearance, you know what I mean? So it was like, so that is a little bit of, I hate to say vapor and spin, because those are like really
truth in advance type thing.
Yeah. It's like, okay, we've got to own it while you're building it. And you've got to, you know, take that step to own that category or to create that category. Because sometimes also utopia is building a category, right? Like, there might not be a category for an incubator that's in a backyard, right? Like, there's a ton of incubators out there and there are a ton of like accelerators, but you're saying, no, we want a homegrown. It's like farm to fork, right? We want like that kind of aspect of building entrepreneurs and keeping them in this area and everything else that is unique. So I think that there's, like I said, sometimes it comes down to, you know, there's a positioning statement that people forget to actually create.
Okay.
And that's an internal facing, you know, statement.
What is that?
It basically outlines what you do different. So it's your USP, who is your target.
Okay.
And what are you doing for them? Like, what's in it for the target?
Interesting.
And it's a very formulaic thing. I mean, some people will come down to, God, I should have had like my deck printed out, because now I'm not going to think of things. I'm trying to think of like a famous one, but they're not external. Like, you'd never know what a company's positioning statement is. I mean, a lot of entrepreneurs will put them out there and be like, oh, it's our tagline. It's like, no, it's not your tagline. It's an internal guidepost that if you start to create something else, you look back and you say, wait, is that what our positioning statement is about? You know, because there's so much, I call it, you know, kind of founder creep or developer creep, where, shit, I was in a pitch and somebody said that this other competitor had this feature. We've got to start building that. And that where it comes down to with a CMO and your sales team and everyone having the same level of voice in that decision, which is prioritization of the roadmap, because maybe a feature that someone heard or the founder thought, oh, this would be great to add, has no relevance with your existing target audience. Now, if it comes down to it, maybe it does mean pivot, right? Like, maybe it's worthy of a pivot.
Yeah, that's interesting, because startups end up pivoting hard almost 100% of the time, right? You're going to end up with a pretty hard pivot somewhere at the beginning of your journey, because there's a discovery process.
Yeah.
With the Growth Factory, you know, I'm using us as an example because you know about us. Some of our audience knows about the Growth Factory. We have multiple people that we're trying to address, right? We have founders. We want them to come to us. We have investors. We'd like them to come to us. We have corporate partners. Would love them to come to us. We have mentors. Would love them to come to us. So, you know, who is our target audience? it's kind of an interesting thing when you have multiple target audiences. And I could see that in other kind of companies
too. Well, that's okay, because those are just segments.
Okay.
Right? So that's where, okay, so you're overarching your umbrella, right? Your foundation. That shouldn't be different for any of them.
Okay.
Right? Like that's still, what is your unique selling proposition to me? It's the same as it would be to an LP, right? So those are all very, like they shouldn't diametrically oppose each other in any way. However, what you tell me are pieces of the messaging that are different, right? That's where, you know, it's just like Coke. Coke is going to talk to a Hispanic person in Mexico very different than they're going to talk to, you know, a college prep student. You know what I mean? They're going to have different, you know, spots. They're going to have different messaging and everything else. But the overarching brand is not going to be different. Right. It's not going to suddenly start using pink because they're in, you know, some other situation or they're talking to a feminine audience. You know what I mean? Unless mm-hmm. it's a major like campaign effort. So that's where you still shouldn't have that rub, right? It still should be, you're just dialing up different kind of features of the product or different benefits of the product. But overarching, it should still be the same thing.
Okay. So you got your brand. Let's assume you've somehow scraped up the money to build the brand story and come up with your statements and, you know, all this stuff, your book and, you know, the essentials for, you know, of a foundation of a, that you can market off of.
Right.
Do all of that before you begin attacking or do try, you know, you can attack a little bit, but.
And maybe it's a little parallel pathing.
Okay.
Right. Like there's, again, if there's a need, a sense of urgency to get in the market, then you need to get in the market.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to have a nimble enough player to, you know, sort of condense that time period. And a lot of it is, you know, gut, right? There is definitely a lot of, and it depends on who you hire. Like I said, I have gone to people, and I hate to say smaller markets, it's harder, like a Sacramento, where mm-hmm. I love the people who have been transplants and they've like had different, you know, like sort of feelings, because a logo isn't just a simple little thing, or an identity package isn't just a, okay, this is fun, let's give them three and then, you know what I mean, we're done and we burn and churn. I think part of that, I don't know where I was going with the thought. I think part of condensing it with the right player is they'll know where they can cut corners and they know where they can backtrack and shore something up, mm-hmm. right? Like you might go out with a logo that then's like right now I have a client who had to change their name, and I've had it twice now where it's a $50,000 hit and a major pivot because they didn't do a trademark search, which you think that that's like number one, but so many young entrepreneurs, and I hate to say millennial by any way, but sometimes millennial, they'll be like, it's okay, I got the URL. Your URL means nothing. Like if you can find a URL, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be unencumbered in your, you know, where you're actually right. trying to have your landscape or your mark. And so we had to change the logo, and we, you know, had 3 weeks to do it because we were already, you know what I mean, in beta.
Wow.
Having to change the
name.
You've
got to change the name of a company, yeah.
Yeah.
And change the logo.
And you know what I mean? And try and retrofit it into a color palette maybe that you didn't want to, even though, you know what I mean? Like none of these mm-hmm. things work. And we know going into it that probably once they get Series A, they're going to do like a tweak.
Yeah.
Like we know it going into it. Like we did the best, like, you know, you did 80% of perfect yep. and you just have to ship it because it needs to get in the market. But okay. we had to change the name. And it was funny because when I first started working with them, they had a name that was Grapevine. And that's like so crowded. Like you couldn't even think to own it. So I was like, initially, you need to say Grapevine AI. There's no, because it's a CRM tool that, you know, is powered by artificial intelligence, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And they're like, ah, oh, it's such a mouthful. I'm like, I don't care. Like the only way you're going to own this is to be able to say Grapevine AI. So then it became like the joke that whenever KB was on the phone or whatever, it was like, if it didn't say Grapevine AI, it became a problem. But then it was, should we just change the name? I was like, yes. A year ago, I said we should just change the name. Like it's so, you know, that space is so crowded. I love that you wanted to do it because, you know, you heard it through the grapevine and it was all of that, but it didn't make sense. So, you know, we had to go through kind of like a little truncated process of like repositioning that whole brand and coming up with a new name and, it, you know, finding the URL and everything else. And that's an exhaustive product, you know, process. Yeah. But we did it probably in about 3 weeks. So it wasn't like it's not doable. You know, you can still follow the same sort of like process. It just means sometimes you got to cut corners. You know, it's beer budget, champagne taste.
Yeah. Does a fractional CMO typically, you know, you help with the branding and stuff, but is the typical fractional CMO running marketing campaigns and helping decide whether they're working or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Like, I mean, again, that comes down to the engagement, right? If somebody has a team, say with a Memorial Sloan Kettering, when I stepped in for sort of 4 or 5 years there, they had a team of kids. I mean, of people running that organization, like in terms of what they were doing. But I came in and sort of was like the, okay, why are we doing this? Like, let's think strategically. Okay. But then it's the evaluation. So absolutely. It just really depends on like sort of what their staff is.
On a fractional CMO, okay, do you come in? Are you the boss? Are you, do they feel when you walk in or when a fractional CMO walks in, because they probably don't have a CMO, right? So that's why they went with a fractional. They have some people, somebody in charge of, you know, running social media ads or something. And then a fractional CMO comes in. Do they feel like they're reporting to you at some level? Or do you don't have hiring and firing sort of authority?
I mean, again, it depends on the organization.
Okay.
In some cases, absolutely. Like in the best case, I would help them hire. I would hire me out of the role. Like,
okay.
I don't want to go full time with a lot of companies, right? Like I like my flexibility. I like my, now that said, I'm on a lot of pitch decks as their CMO if they got funding, you know what I mean? So it's like a little bit of a, you know,
give them some gravitas
or whatever. And also like, okay, so you do have some adults, right? Cause there's some young kids that are out there and you need to have some of those people who have had like a little bit more tenure and, you know, doing things. And so maybe I would go full time. Like if it was the right opportunity and it was, you know, a really interesting sort of, you know, space and everything else, then maybe I would do full time. But ideally there's enough ownership that yes, I am helping to hire. I am hiring agencies or I'm bringing people in house. Like, so you're making the determination of, is it time to like now buy it and have it in house, or are we still renting and it still makes sense to, you know, have it outsourced?
So when is that? When do you typically see when do you transition? So a small round of funding, let's say somebody raises a couple million bucks, you're not ready to go pay $200,000 a year for one marketing person, probably.
No.
But let's say they raise $10 million. It's like, well, I don't know. Is there a time?
There's no textbook. I don't think I'd ever be able to give you a textbook answer of like at 10 million you should hire. I think at that level, if you've gotten that kind of funding, ideally you've already got some MRR, you've already got some revenue, you know, you're maybe just not profitable. So now you're looking to scale.
Does it determine what kind of business it is? Cause some of these companies are like, look, we have to build a marketing machine. We're like 40% of our employees are in the marketing department because we're direct to consumer sort of stuff. And we market like crazy, big expense. And then others maybe are in B2B where it's a little more face-to-face sales or something like that, relationship building, and maybe you don't need as many people in your marketing department.
Well, I think that comes down, I mean, that's it exactly, right? Like I would say a lot of times with that bigger round of funding, the Series A, the 10 to 15 million or whatever, that's where you're like, okay, what's your marketing tech stack? Like now let's not cut corners in those areas, right? Because the HubSpots and all those things, you know, get you in that first year of, oh, we're going to let you in on the scholarship. And then all of a sudden you're paying $3,000 a month. And do you need three? You know what I mean? That's a whole body. Mm-hmm. That's an FTE almost.
Right.
So I think that becomes that next decision of like, what is your automation? What can you automate? And then I think there's always a benefit to hiring an agency versus bringing some people in-house. Because you're gonna reduce the rate. Like having a growth hacker or someone like that on staff, it might be good, but finding those people are like, they're unicorns.
Well, and the fixed costs, right? That's one of the, you know, your CFO or your outsourced CFO, fractional CFO, he or she's gonna say, look, what are your fixed costs? These FTEs, full-time employees, when I look at that, I'm just like, I have 10 full-time employees. I'm thinking I am averaging 100,000 per year per person. That's a lot of, fixed expenses, because yeah, firing people's hard to do if you get over your skis, on your forecast.
Right.
So, yeah, nobody wants to be letting your marketing person go.
Where there's economies of scale of not hiring one person for $7,000 a month. Let's just say even at the minimum $5,000, right? Like sort of a junior person. I could pay an agency $5,000 and ideally get three people looking at it and using their economies of scale if we find the right one.
Right.
Right. But that, it all depends. There's a lot of agencies out there that are saying they're doing all these things. And then you get into the, you get in bed with them and you're like, okay, first of all, you said you'd do creative. This is shit create. You know what I mean? So nothing. So there's just all those like sort of hit and misses that you end up finding.
And so an outsourced CMO, I think of, I'm just ballparking some numbers. If you go hire a top notch, that term's relative, but somebody with experience as your CMO, you might pay 150, 200,000 bucks a year is what's going through my head. I don't know if that's
a full-time CMO or a fractional.
I was saying full-time. Am I wrong on that?
I mean, I would depend on the market.
In Sacramento, it's low.
Yeah, I'd probably say, who knows who the background is, like in terms of like the but I would say probably 200 is like your minimum.
Minimum. Okay. Don't go below 200. Otherwise you're not going to have good quality.
Yeah.
How do you, in terms of a fractional, is it half the price or how does that work?
Sometimes it's even less than half the price.
Okay.
Right? Like it just depends. Like I don't do an engagement for less than, I tend to not want to do hourly. I know a lot of people that I come encountered with that are like, oh, I do a day rate and it's $2,000 a day. And they hired me to come in and do a workshop. And then the workshop does nothing because, we've outlined all these things, but then we don't know how to make them work, which is why I have a very different like sort of MO, which is now I roll up my sleeves. Like I become like, I get an email address with their email. Okay. Like I am one of you. I'm a consultant. And I just say, well, you should be doing this. I'm like, we're doing this. Right. And I'm hammering it in of like, is this happening? Is this you know what I mean? Those types of things. So, I probably have way too many clients right now. I'm like, just because there's such a need for it. But I would say you can get it for half of that and maybe even less. But again, you have to make sure, like I know a lot of people who are coming, that my contemporaries that I started with that have like worked in big brands for, the last 20 years instead of doing what I've done. And they come out and they're getting great like retainers, but they truly don't do anything, right? Because they've been in big organizations where, you need to get a guerrilla marketing effort off the ground. Okay, so what department do I, like, I'm going to go hire this agency. It's like, no, you can't hire that agency because that's going to be $10,000. Like, we have $4,000 for this. Or, okay, I'm going to go pay this big, branding firm to do my tchotchke. It's like, no, we're doing that on our own. Like, so those are those things that I think a lot of the CMOs who startups might hire don't get how to make things happen, right? To get shit done.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, you kind of have to ask, like when you're interviewing that person or you're trying to figure out, because you might be able to get a director without it being like a fractional CMO. Like maybe you don't need that much of a caliber of person. You just need someone who's going to look at it more from a classical standpoint and say, okay, so what is our difference? Okay, here are our benefits. Like make sure that the website doesn't talk in features. Like that's the biggest folly. So many companies that start out with like, here are all our features of our product. It's like, but that doesn't mean anything to a consumer, right? They want to know how is it going to affect them. They want to have the features. Like you have to have that, right? You still have to have like, okay, what does our product include? But the lead is the benefit.
Yeah.
And a true marketer is going to understand that. And that's where I get into like my pet peeve and like I could go on all day about, when I was at Intel, my final parting, like, come to Jesus was we were launching Celeron with Pentium 2. So I don't know if you remember, but they had like every 2 years, they'd roll the rev on the processor speed and everything else. And they suddenly started realizing that people didn't need the processing speed because it just, like the development in the developing community hasn't caught up with the speed that was even needed. So, but their expense was so high that they were like, okay, we're going to dumb it down and have Celeron. So they launched them together. So Wall Street Journal, print ad, Pentium with Celeron. Like, so basically here's this great new chipset. It's amazing. And oh, by the way, if you can't afford that, here's this Celeron, shitty one. So it'd be like the Dodge Viper and the Dodge Neon having a spot together. No, the Dodge Viper has a very different consumer base, very different, you know, target audience than the Viper. So that's where, again, they might have been master marketers, but they really weren't, right? Because they didn't understand the very basic, fundamental.
Well, okay, so let's maybe give some basic advice. This last question, I'd like to just maybe share to our audience, the entrepreneur, the person who's a startup potentially, or maybe a business owner, maybe just like some closing thoughts, words of wisdom as they approach their marketing effort and to grow their business.
I would say if you can do one thing, like you haven't done anything, is to figure out what makes you different than your competitors, and does your consumer understand that difference? Right? I know that keeps coming back to that sort of unique selling proposition, but truly, and if it might just be the brand, right? Coke really is kind of the brand that makes it different. Nike, to some degree, was just the brand. So it can be a brand play, but then it's got to be emotional, right? That's how, you know, Apple, yes, has a technology to back it up, but initially, it wasn't like necessarily the computing power that it brought out. It was the brand. It was 100% a brand play. And so much of what's out there now is a brand play that that's why a CMO is even more critical, right? There's so much, there isn't like green space out there as much, right? Like the land of, you know, kind of get rich quick and coming into a category and creating a category is harder. We're slicing and dicing things. So your brand is everything. So if you can figure out what can make you different, even if it's customer service or price, something that's sustainable, I think that's like a critical piece. And then maintain the consistency. Make sure that everybody, even if it's a 10-person, you know, company, is saying the same thing. Try not to like, you know, we had a lot of kids that even at Memorial Sloan Kettering, when there's, you know, 20 people in there writing emails, they'd try and move things or they'd make a post in social media and be like, why are you doing that? Like the, you know, like we don't need to do that. We're like, oh, I just thought I'd try it. It's like, there's no way out, wear out, right? Like they have to keep that in mind too, that like someone like Coke or Nike with Just Do It, how many years have they been using that?
It works.
Is there wear out? Probably, but now there's just a 100% like awareness of what that is. So it worked. Whereas, you know, trying to test things and keep throwing things out, like I get it. If it's not working, then you can throw it out. But let's try and give it some, you know, a little bit of time to grow. Exactly.
Catherine, appreciate you coming on the show, sharing some great advice about marketing and building our businesses. Appreciate what you're doing to help the Growth Factory too.
Well, hopefully it was useful. Yeah.
Definitely. Thank you.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. And yes, it was our lucky day today. You know, as I mentioned, some guys have all the luck. Or do they? Maybe it's that some guys, some people put themselves in a position to win. And I think that's what we're doing here at the Growth Factory. We are bringing the community together to help the most promising startups, and we're bringing the startups together with the community that wants to help them. We are putting both of those segments of our population in a position to win. Really, that nobody builds a truly great company alone. I'm wearing my Power of With shirt right now if you're watching on YouTube, and really there is the power that is uncommon when you put the right people in your lives in order to win, whether you're an investor, whether you're a startup, whether you're a larger corporation, or whether you're somebody that just wants to give back to our community. We got to put ourselves in a position to achieve our goals. So if you are one of those people out there thinking, you know, what is my best option to put myself in a position to win, and I'm a startup, I think you should reach out to me. I want to know you. I want to see if you might be a fit for the Growth Factory, but also I want to know all the entrepreneurs in our region. Who knows? Maybe I can open a door for you. Maybe there's a light bulb that that might go off. If you put yourself around people with real world experience, it can be game changing. So anybody out there that wants to be involved in the startup community, in the entrepreneurial ecosystem, in the trenches of building businesses, come see me at the Growth Factory. We are at growthfactory.us. We have invested into our first cohort of companies. The second group of companies we'll be investing into will be, the deadline to apply actually is at the end of April. So if you're a startup, you better get on the stick. If you are a mentor or maybe a corporation that wants to be a little bit more entrepreneurial and you want some of this entrepreneurial spirit to rub off on you, hit me up. Again, go to growthfactory.us or hit me up on social media. At the Mark Haney is my handle. And really just a salute to everybody out there that is putting themselves in a position to win, that's working on the big dream and trying to figure out how to get it done. Nobody builds a truly great company alone. And so I know sometimes out there you can feel alone, but it doesn't have to be that way. But we salute you. And here at the Growth Factory, here at Haney Biz, you can know, you can be certain that we're never above you. We're never below you. We're always by your side. This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.